welcome back to the Live Support Ops Hangout. I'm your host, Chase Clemens. This is our weekly talk show where we talk about everything customer related. So customer support, customer service, customer experience, all that fun stuff. We're live via a Google Hangout just like this one every single Monday, 5:30 p.m. Central, 3:30 Pacific, and all those other times you can figure out in that handy-dandy time zone link we've got in the show notes. This week, Carolyn and Chase are out. The other Chase are out, but we've got Jeff back. Jeff, how are things out in Wistia world?
Oh, they're wonderful. Thanks, Chase.
And then this week, we've got a special guest, Micah from Zapier. Micah, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Micah Bennett. I do support at Zapier. If you're unfamiliar with them, we help people connect at web apps by moving data from one to the other. Been doing that for a little while now. Coming to you live from Greater Chicagoland, so the fine suburbs of that fair city. But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, Zapier, if you've never used Zapier, it's one of the best apps out there. If nothing else, like, you know, those hard questions that you get from customers where they're like, hey, I want to take Basecamp and make it talk to QuickBooks. Like, we're not going to do anything like that. QuickBooks probably isn't going to do anything like that. But InStep's Zapier with these awesome Zaps that connect the two, and the customer's happy and we're happy, and it's just a good day. I mean, I love Zapier, which is my way of saying, hey, if you haven't used it, make sure to check it out. Yeah, so this week we're talking about customer pain points. You know, we know, and we've talked about it on the show before, about how knowing customers' pain points help us make a product better. You know, finding out where they're having problems, where they're getting confused, where something isn't working like they think it should work or like it is supposed to or anything like that. Finding those kind of specific interactions that they're having with your product, once you know those, you can go in and make the product better. You can improve those pain points and help eliminate those. But a lot of times these pain points get trapped with a support team. You know, they'll come in emails and the support team won't really mention it to their product team or any product managers you've got going on. So basically, the support land becomes this graveyard for these different pain points that customers are experiencing today. So today we're going to talk about what to do about those, you know, how you should be keeping up with them, how to keep it from, you know, just being the support team that knows about those, how to get it the word out to the rest of the team. I think it's going to be a really great conversation. So let's kind of start just real briefly. And Jeff, we'll let you tackle this one first. When it comes to Wistia, when you look at customer pain points inside Wistia, how does looking at those and researching those actually help your team out?
Ooh, great question. So customer pain points, I think that... there's a lot of customer pain points. There's the set that we've probably talked about before, which is like things that don't work like they're supposed to. And we have a whole process around that. I feel like we've covered that before. But then there's a whole nother set, which is like things that Wistia doesn't do and maybe it should. Is that kind of what you're getting at, Chase?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of those, you know, when I think about with Basecamp, when I think about pain points, they tend to be, some of them are disguised like feature requests. So we're talking like somebody wants Gantt charts and we're just not going to do Gantt charts. But other people, you know, one of the ones that came up recently is where customers can't copy Basecamp templates for themselves. We can do it on our end, but there's this pain involved with the customer having to write into us and give us a link and us do this. And it's just it's a process.
Right. Totally. So we tend to go about researching those. So first, I guess they go through a filter, right? Because like you said, a lot of these go into support every day. And I don't think you could run every single one of them into, you know, a research group, or you can't run to your engineering team and say, what can we do with this? You can't run to your, you know, if you work at a company with a product team, you can't run to your product team and say like, what do we do this? What if we do this? And some of that, means that the strategy or the vision or the roadmap should be better communicated to the support team. So it's a little bit easier for you to say, for example, Basecamp wise, like, you know, I hear what you're asking for. It sounds like you're asking for Gantt charts. I get why, you know, you're coming from another product. You're probably used to it. We've made a decision that we're not doing Gantt charts because X, Y, Z. So it makes it a lot easier for you to do that. So I guess what I'm getting at is you're going to have a whole barrage of those types of things coming in, especially if people have used an app before that did X, you know, oh, my old provider did this. Can you guys do that? And I think that's a recipe for just, you know, copying a competitor's features instead of building your own. So some of it has to be set up before you even get into the support mindset. And if your team's not doing that for you, I think you have to initiate that by saying, when you get into those conversations with other folks on your team, say, well, you know, it doesn't feel super clear what we are going to build and what we're not. So maybe we should get clear internally about where we're going and what falls into, you know, the Wistia way of doing things or the Basecamp way of building product or whatever. I think after that, the next filter that we put in place is that I think we probably stole from 37 Signals back in the day is just ignore most of them. I think that there's a post by Jason that talks about what you should do with your feature requests, and you should just, I think he uses, you know, in typical polarizing fashion, he says just throw them out. I don't think you should throw them out, but I do think what I'm trying to get at is the ones that come up again and again and again are the ones that you should follow up on. And the thing that the support person has a really unique perspective for is putting together disparate requests into a single possible solution. I guess what I mean is it's rare for a customer to come to you with a fully formed feature request that makes perfect sense to put on your roadmap. It's more likely that 10 different customers over 10 days are going to suggest some small tweaks that line up with your current roadmap. And it's your job to, or I guess it's not your job, but over time, great support people tend to be able to put all those into, they congeal in the back of their mind, and they come up with a suggestion or a way of thinking about these things that informs how they, you know, communicate with the rest of their team. So long-winded answer, probably not what you were looking for, but that's how we think about it. That's why I think it's really valuable. And that's how I try to, when we bring on like a new team member, that's how I try to communicate something like this. It's not important for you to write down every single request that we get. But what's important to do is find the ones that seem like they line up with where we're going, and then start to put the pieces together in terms of how we can build something that solves the larger, like the underlying problem for, you know, a certain group of our customers.
Yeah, you know, Micah, when we talk about Zapier, you know, you're connecting APIs to APIs, so basically taking two completely distinct products and merging them into this weird fun land. Have you ever ran into points in doing that where your customers just found that to be confusing in any way? Any times where they looked and they were like, yeah, I know you can connect Basecamp and QuickBooks, but how does that even work?
Yeah, so I wish the answer to that was no, but it happens all the time where people want to do things that, you know, either aren't immediately obvious, kind of like in your example, or they're doing something where it's not intuitively obvious to maybe them how exactly this is going to happen. And this is the big challenge we have in just designing the product, and that's one of the reasons that we have a lot of things in place to both have the entire team working support, and both have a lot of persistent communication in surfacing issues to different teams, be it engineering, design, things like that, to make sure that the process of doing that is as smooth as it can be. And even then, we run into points where there are more structural issues. To give you an example, across 350 apps, different apps handle time differently. So dates, how they're formatted, formats especially, can be tricky because, you know, Basecamp, I don't know off the top of my head, but they may, you know, maybe expecting, you know, day, month, year, or what have you, and someone else might be expecting month, day, year, if some, you know, European app or something like that. And so that's a challenge that we run into because at the moment we don't have an answer for it. And so this is where users, it's a pain point for them because it's not necessarily something that's broken in how Zapier works, but it's either limiting or preventing them entirely from using the product. And so to kind of go back to that original question of how do the pain points help us, it's for us, it's big in identifying how to prevent churn because you can, you know, see these things crop up again and again, you know, in the issue of something like date formats, where if we can deliver a solution on that, we're not only, you know, making this one user happy, but like Jeff mentioned, you know, once you put it through that support intuition, that filter, you know, you can find those that are going to make that disproportionate impact where you're helping tens, hundreds of customers with that particular problem. So, you know, not only you win by making them happy, but you also kind of fix it, you know, maybe in a more permanent sense in the example that I had.
Yeah. So how do we actually keep up with all of these different pain points and things? So like, you know, Micah with Zapier, are you keeping like any kind of list of, you know, X number of customers wrote in this week and said that it was confusing to do this?
So we do that in some part. You kind of mentioned pain points as feature requests, and that's something we see a lot of because a lot of times pain points when it comes to integrating apps is in functionality we don't have, maybe in terms of just the core functionality of Zapier or just at the very end of the spoke in that because Zapier works on a trigger action mechanism, we're only as useful as the apps and the triggers and actions themselves. And so we don't always have everything people need, and there's constantly requests for those. So we document those, and we try and keep track of increases in demand. We do that on the app level too, to just, you know, give ourselves some sort of roadmap for when we do have time to dedicate to extending that type of functionality, what we can do. And then for more internal processes, things that are more core to, you know, how Zapier runs. How, you know, different things along like user settings and, you know, team controls, what have you. That's more to go back to that discussion of how this aligns with the roadmap. This is what our engineering team has the bandwidth to do. This is what match up with what else we're trying to do. And so, you know, you kind of have to put it through that filter. But at the same time, we aggregate all of those as they come in and then try and keep up as best we can with, you know, each incremental request, be it, you know, the plus ones or the extra votes and things like that.
Yeah, so let's look at this in kind of a real life example here with Jeff and Wistia. Jeff, if you get 15 customers that write in this week and say, hey, you know, it's really confusing how to reset my password. I feel like we always go back to resetting password. It's kind of like a default thing. But it's a good one. You know, you got 15 people that write in and say, hey, I could not figure out how to reset my password. How would Wistia look at, you know, evaluate that pain point that they're experiencing and then do something to fix it?
I muted myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're still muted, but that's cool.
how would we think about that? That is a really, really great question. Because I don't want to sound like a cowboy, but likely I would look at it and try to figure out if we could improve it. The way that things normally work when something is broken. So in this case, something is sort of broken, right? Somebody is not understanding what the problem is. I think what we would start with is a good number of questions for the people who are writing in, like, what about it didn't seem, you know, clear to you? Was it the copy? Was it that the button that you pushed didn't do what you thought it was going to do? You know, classic example, our reset password emails didn't say reset password in the link. It said reset account or something like that. And people were saying like, oh my God, I don't want to reset my account. I just need a new password. So we would try to ask a lot of questions and get really clear on what of the current functionality is not working quite the way that it should. And we use GitHub issues to track all that stuff. So we would open a new issue and we would say, you know, this is not working the way that it should. Here are some, you know, links to support conversations that detail the problem. Here are our, you know, or mine, you know, whoever opens the ticket, recommendations for what we might want to do to solve the problem. So outlining the problems and then suggested resolution to those problems. Then the thing I love about that is everybody gets an email that says a new issue has been created. They can go and view that and then see all of the, everybody's looking at the same stuff. And then people can chime in and say, this doesn't seem like a problem because, or, you know, this is how I would do it, or, you know, whatever. We get to a place where we've decided whether we're going to take action or not. And then I mean, something like that would probably be something that I would want to go and fix, because that is very core functionality when a customer can't log into their account. But there are other things, other features where somebody's not seeing in a Wistia case, like they're not seeing the stats data that they would expect to see. They're like, it's great that I can see opens, but I want to see percentage of people who go to the page who also view the video. That might be open in an issue, especially if we see a bunch of conversations like that. But maybe nothing would get done with it until we got to a place where we were going to update the way that stats are done, right? That's not as core functionality. It doesn't prevent them from getting any value from their account. So I guess that's how we would tackle it, is you look at how core is this thing? How broken is the Wistia experience if this thing doesn't work? And how much work are we talking about in order to fix this? So you kind of have to you kind of balance those two things. In the case of a password reset button not working, if it's as simple as the copy is really misleading like ours was, we'd probably just try to jump right in there and fix it immediately so that no one else experienced that problem. If it's something that is should be fixed but isn't really core functionality, doesn't prevent them from getting any other value out of the product, we'd probably prioritize it according to everything else we had on the list.
Yeah, I was reading about that the other day. I'll try to find the article for it, but they were talking about how we try to get cutesy with our copy sometimes with the words that we pick, and sometimes you just need a login button rather than something that says "Let's get started." Just keep it short, simple. Reset the account. That might make sense to programmers and things that are looking at it, but from the customer viewpoint, that would terrify me. I would never click a button that said "Reset account." Just not happening. Not gonna happen.
So a surprising number of people did.
I get paranoid enough when I know exactly what the button's gonna do, like delete. Like, are you sure it's just gonna delete this one thing? You with the GitHub issues there, that's kind of a cool idea. So if you're looking at all of the issues going on inside of Wistia's GitHub account, how do you know which issues are ones that are that core broken functionality, like a bad copy on the password reset link? How do you differentiate between those and kind of just stats that you're going to upgrade down the road, like you mentioned?
That is a good question.
Do you
And
just
I don't
know?
think
Is it
it's
just a feeling?
I don't think it's one that we have a solid answer for. I think GitHub, I mean, GitHub provides labels that you can use to a certain extent, but I don't know if anyone's going to label something core functionality, or that we're going to create a label for core functionality. I think it tends to be something where the person who creates the issue would say something like, "This feels like a really big deal to me. I think we should try to solve this immediately." Things that are not picked up immediately for whatever reason, and I guess we have to build a better process around this, they tend to stay open as an issue so that people like our customer champions and support who see another instance of this can add that link to that conversation to the open issue. But it's likely that someone who's working on that part of the product is going to move that issue to like a Trello board, for example, so that they can, prioritize it, slot the cards the way that they'd want to, and have like a separate place to track the progress that's made against that issue.
If there was
I guess
only
it kind
some
of
app
depends.
out there that could take a GitHub issue and make a Trello card from it automatically, some kind of Zap app that could do something like, not that I'm saying Zapier could, I don't know. I'm just saying if they could, it'd be awesome.
I mean, a zap sounds like a really good name for it.
Indeed. It can. That's pretty popular, actually. And it's something we do, not GitHub to Trello, but we use both GitHub for issues and Trello of feature request type stuff and roadmap type stuff. So that's kind of the differentiation we use, because, again, using the same two tools, for GitHub issues being maybe less things that are like, I guess I don't really think of them as a pain point, but rather like, this broke, and this is like, this is burning, and Trello is more for things like, we should add this, or this, in some cases it should be more like, this should be clearer, or this should be updated, because when I at least when I think of the term that pain point, a lot of times it's something we need to just add clarity for. or at somewhere along the line. So maybe we need to be more upfront about what we do and don't do before people ever get started. Maybe there's help text language we can add somewhere along the way. Or maybe there's just, you know, after the fact, there's documentation to write on, you know, this is a complicated process and this specific use case requires more handholding. And that's the sort of stuff that we would kind of put into Trello. We have legion of boards to differentiate a lot of different things along those lines. And then with GitHub, you know, depending on how you use it, you know, you can keep that for maybe more things that are the fix or do this now or like this is urgent. At least that's how we do it at Zapier. But you could use Zapier to, you know, move them back and forth. Depending on however you liked it, because that's the cool thing about GitHub Issues and Trello cards is that they are very one-size-fits-all tools and that you can mold them to your own workflows.
Yeah, and just to give you a third perspective, you know, all of you wonderful listeners out there, a third perspective, how we do it at Basecamp, we tend to have one project for Basecamp feature requests and pain points and things like that. And then what Jeff was talking about with issues, basically those for us are open to-dos. So you create a new to-do, use the comments on that to-do to talk about potential solutions for it, any case links or anything like that, all that gets put on the thread. And it's got this added benefit of, you know, you can assign this to-do out to somebody to have them specifically look at it, kind of keep track of it that way. So that's how we do it at Basecamp. You know, pretty much the same that these guys are using, just using a different tool to do it.
I think the thing I'm liking a lot about the GitHub Issues flow for us is that at least if there's something that I'm going to be the person that solves or like some of the other things that I've seen people solve, GitHub has done a great job of connecting their issues flow with their pull request flow. So if you open a pull request to solve a specific issue, you can link those two things together so that someone who's doing, you know, research or tracking this problem for later can see the progress you're making against that issue. And the other thing that I really like about it is that it emails everyone who's linked to our GitHub repository when that new issue gets created. And there's a lot of, I don't want our support people, our customer champions to feel you know, like they can't create an issue if something seems broken. But at the same time, I want them to get immediate feedback. I want them to create an issue and then asynchronously get feedback from someone like on the engineering team. If they say, oh, you know, you're right. Like stats are not, you know, whatever stats haven't been aggregating for this weird subset of accounts for a little while, but actually something that I'm working on that you just weren't aware of, something I've been working on for the last week is going to resolve that. So I can actually just close this issue. It's like a great place to me, a better place than Trello for the conversation to happen because it's more visible. But it could just be that we don't have, we don't go through all the settings in Trello the way that we should.
See, that's the fun thing with the show. You know, we talk some big concepts, but at the same time, we give you some really concrete, actionable stuff. Like use a GitHub issue for this. It works really well. Do you find, you know, Jeff, when it comes to those GitHub issues, you mentioned earlier that everybody in the team gets, you know, email notification about it and they can all see it whenever they look at that repo and that kind of thing. Do you find that works in making sure that, you know, those kind of issues don't get dropped in the cracks anywhere?
It can. I mean, there's, if you go and you look at all of our issues. So one thing that Jordan from my team is working on right now is, who's going to like comb back through the issues and look at all those old issues that never got paid attention to. And if you go back and you look at them, there are certainly some that are like, you know, ping this person, like, or like, let me just get this back in your email inbox in case you missed it the first time. So there's certainly times where it doesn't work flawlessly. But sometimes that's actually a good thing. I think if you were to ask me, if I get one email from someone who says, I clicked, you know, reset my password and I never got an email. And I'm like, oh my God, the reset password email thing is broken. And I open an issue about it. No one responds. And also nobody else gets an email like that for the next week or two. It wasn't an issue. It just was not a problem. Ben said something from my team, said something really smart to me. He's very smart in general, but he said something really brilliant to me a few weeks ago, which was At a certain size, we were at probably hundreds of customers, if not, you know, maybe several thousand. We used to look at support issues and say, like, if this person is experiencing it, it probably represents a larger group of people who are also experiencing it. So, you know, if one person is experiencing it, that's actually a pretty good percentage of our customer base that's probably having this problem. As we've grown to, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of active accounts, we're at a place now where the law of large numbers starts to take over, and it says, if you only hear about it from one person, it's not that big of an issue, actually. You're going to hear about it from many, many people, because there are just so many people hitting all of these weird edge cases every day. So I've actually gained confidence in the idea that if you open an issue that feels like it's in the normal traffic flow and lots of people should be hitting it, and yet we don't hear any other whispers about it for a week or two, it's just not that big of an issue, and we should be fairly confident in just closing it. We should be aware of it, I suppose, for like our next iteration on whatever part of the product that is, but it's not something that we should just dive on immediately.
Yeah. So Micah, we'll give you the last question for the day. You know, Jeff was talking about Trello and GitHub, and you mentioned that Zapier is using those tools as well. Is that the only way you're making sure, you know, that these kind of pain points don't get trapped in just the support team, you know, making sure that the rest of the company hears about those in some way?
It's not. So one of the biggest reasons is that everyone at Zapier does support, at least in some small part. There are three of us that do it full time. All of our full time developers go through a rotation where they're handling support on a weekly basis in terms of technical support. And then even beyond that, people who are either non devs or non support, they have basically a weekly time that they come in and you know, help with support. And this, you know, this handling of pain points is one of the huge benefits that affords us, because not only does it help, you know, keep support volume down a little bit, and it helps, you know, people in interacting with customers and staying close to customers, but it makes those pain points very real when you're the one discovering it. So hard, or whatever the you know, the app you're using to surface these things, it can have very different implications than when you're reading the actual person's complaints or, you know, talking to them about that specific issue. And that can oftentimes accelerate the urgency that the people who are then equipped to fix these issues, because, you know, again, these are our engineers, designers, things like that, who are talking to our customers and, you know, then acting upon that. And so that's one of the things we actually encourage, is that, like, not to, when those people are working on support, not just to focus on, like, okay, I got to answer as many emails as I possibly can. It's to, you know, find those that are, you know, hitting these pain points or are particularly fascinating for other reasons. And then because you aren't bound by, you know, the weight of the inbox, that you, you know, take that extra time to make sure that this, you know, gets fixed or this gets escalated. And gets, you know, dealt with more appropriately than if, say, me or one of my support comrades saw it on a random Tuesday. The other thing is that, well, and something we've started doing very recently is just to help promote, you know, inter-team communication, is having pairings for each week with a different member of our team. This is something we borrowed from Buffer, so maybe Carolyn could speak more about it at a different date. But just the ability to talk to other people on your team about their challenges and our challenges can help, you know, not only with internal stuff, but also with customer pain points. As it relates to us, a good example is we've long talked about doing some aesthetic upgrades to our help site. And, you know, because of the time that having a pair buddy and me and our designer, Brian, being matched up together afforded us, we had the time to crank that out. And now, you know, even though materially it's not terribly different in terms of the content available, Zapier Help is now, you know, probably 1,000% more attractive to look at, which makes a difference with you know, confidence and things like that. So that's just kind of the process that we use for you know, surfacing issues in general, is that, you know, we not only as a remote team have to do a lot of communicating with each other too, but we set up the team so that there's a lot of that communication to begin with, because everyone's sharing this experience and doing support, at least in part. And then we do have a lot of set up cross you know, team communication to make sure that we aren't siloed in what we're doing and that, you know, everyone feels the customer's pain and we feel each other's pain to get everything that needs to be done, done in the right amount of time.
Yeah, and on that note, that's it from me. Gents, do you have anything else you want to throw in before we head into the shout-outs?
Please throw something else in so I can get the sound effects up.
Oh, so we're just killing time right now. Just killing time.
No, not killing time. Come on, Mike has got so much more that we can mine from him.
Micah did mention the everyone working support. I forget, Jeff, does Wistia do anything like that?
Yeah, we have all-hand support. Mercer is running that. We normally have two people on support a day a week. And actually, most people just do it for the morning. And then they close out or they follow up on those tickets in the afternoon. So, we totally have that. And I completely agree with everything Mike has said in terms of the reasoning for that. For us, I tend to focus more on, I want everybody in the company to get to know our customers and their problems. In terms of the technical issues and the problems that they experience, we should be doing a better job of escalating those, I guess, right? Of recognizing what's literally not working or what is, you know, just a pain point or a frustration for our customers. We should be doing a better job of reporting those and sharing those around. I completely agree with that practice. I totally recommend it.
Yeah, I say, you know, we do, we call it everyone on support here at the Basecamp team. We do the same thing. It's you know, you'll be surprised that a programmer gets in, and it literally happened last week. A programmer got in and saw, I think he had 15 or 18 different customers that were writing in asking about that copying templates thing that I mentioned earlier. And you know, when you see that many, you know that's a problem. There's a significant pain going into this, and it's something, you know, especially when it's something you've got a stopgap for. You can do it on our, you know, we can do it on our side. We can make a copy of a template. We just haven't exposed that in the UI yet. So I mean, you know, it's just a stopgap. You know, it's an actual problem at that point, and kind of seeing that, you know, multiple people seeing that in their all hand support shift, it just reinforces that. Is that enough time?
Yeah. I agree. The only thing I wanted to say, I guess just counter to that is it shouldn't take them experiencing it for it to become something that's worth fixing. And I think that it's a sign of an underlying problem between, you know, your engineering team and your support team. If support people are like, yeah, we handle that all the time. I told you about it here, here, and here. And the engineer is like, well, but now I'm experiencing it. It's like, well, maybe you should have listened to me the first time, first couple of times. So something to think about. I know it's easier said than done, but
yeah, you got to have that balance in there. You know, you've got to be able to, I think, you know, Micah was talking earlier about how much communication that goes into all of this from the support team to the rest of the team. And I think that's key, you know, when you're constantly, especially remote teams like, you know, Zapier, like Basecamp, you got to really over-communicate in some ways. You've got to be abundantly clear about what things are significant problems in your product that you're seeing, you know, that customers are talking about day in and day out versus the one random person that didn't get a password reset. That's not a big deal. But yeah, definitely a balance in there.
Cool.
All right. So with that brings us to the best part of the show. It's this week's shoutouts. These are the things that are making us happy, so happy that we want to share them with you. We want to shout them out from the top of the rooftops, mountaintops, or whatever other analogy you want to use of some person yelling things at other people. You know, these are the things that we just can't resist sharing with everybody. So, Jeff, we'll let you go first. Jeff, what's your shout out for this week?
Okay. My shout out this week is for the Wisdom 2.0 conference. I just recently came across it. I was reading an article. One of my articles, my shout-outs from last week, I might have just tangentially mentioned it, but the guys from Asana wrote an article about how they work, how they bring more mindfulness to what they do, and they referenced a talk that they had given at this Wisdom 2.0 conf. And so I went and checked it out. I think it's wisdom2conference.com, something like that. And what I found was they offer all of their videos from previous conferences on YouTube, and so many of the talks seem relevant and valuable to a web, you know, a web company, a company that is trying to go like grow like crazy, but take care of its people, or trying to pack as much in as possible, but keep everybody sane and happy at work, and trying to redefine what we consider to be a really successful company. So I love the message of the conference. I love a lot of the talks are like 20 minutes and under, almost like a TED Talk type of style, which means that they're super digestible. So I would go and check a couple out. I wish I had one off the top of my head that I could recommend, but I think just go and look for one that really resonates with you.
Awesome. Micah, have you got a shout out? I completely forgot to warn you that this happens every week. So if you don't, you know, that's cool.
I would be a bad first time caller, a long time listener, if I wasn't aware. So
I totally agree.
Thank you. So I do have one, and that's an app called Breevy, because I've found myself more and more aware that I'm in a vast minority as a Windows user in our space. So, but anyway, Breevy is basically the a Windows alternative to Text Expander. And so it's been huge for me in just being able to automate small bits that I'm always typing. The huge part is URLs. There are also some common phrases, but I don't know how many keystrokes it saved me in just the few months I've been using it, but it's worked out great. So I wholeheartedly recommend that for all 8 of you who may happen to use Windows as well and are looking for something along those lines. Because they're in the text expansion space, there's Text Expander and then not Text Expander. And when you don't have a Mac, you don't really have much else to turn without some searching.
Cool. My shout out for this week, I don't think we've mentioned it on the show before. I was just looking through show notes earlier, and I don't think I've seen it, but just in case I have, forgive me. The app that I've really been in love with this week is the Cloud app. Have we talked about that one before, Jeff? Do you remember?
If we did, it was a while ago, so you might as well refresh everybody, including me.
And that's one of those, you know, Cloud app just got a 3.0, I think. It's the version they're on update. Anyways, great little thing for sharing just about anything and everything. You know, you grab a file, drag and drop it on their little icon in the menu bar, and it gives you a link that you can share with whoever you need to right away. For me, from the support side, there's two built-in tools that I use all the time. Take a screenshot and take an animated recording GIF. So literally it's a keystroke. It's Shift Command S. It automatically takes a screenshot for me. Shift Command G automatically takes a GIF for me, so I can share those with the customers really easily. You know, instead of having to open up, you know, something like LiceCap or something to make it and then drag and drop and attach and all that. Like, it's just too many buttons, too many clicks for me. So Cloud app does it all pretty much automatically for you. It takes no time at all to set up. It's super, super easy. So definitely check it out. I'll have that and all of the other apps that we talked about in the show notes, along with links to, like the article that Jeff mentioned earlier and that kind of thing. And if I can find the article I was talking about, I'll put it in there. I gotta find it somewhere. Let us know what you thought about this episode. All you got to do is head over to supportops.co, click on that contact button there, and that'll get you right to us so you can let us know what you thought about it. And if you get a chance, leave us a review on iTunes. It goes a long way in getting the word out about the show. Other than that, I'm Chase. We'll see you again next week.